Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Gary Cohen in the WFAN studios. There's been a major earthquake in San Francisco. Let's go out to Susan Waldman at Candlestick Park. Susan, what's the situation there?
Okay, Gary, I'll tell you, this is the scariest I've ever been in my life. This is an earthquake here, a 6.8 on the Richter scale. This upper deck was absolutely shaking. The light stanchions were blowing back and forth. Phones have gone off. All the power is out in the city of San Francisco and in the city of Oakland. Everyone is standing around here, people in the upper deck, absolutely terrified to move, not knowing what to do. There's supposed to be an aftershock. Everybody from the New York media wants me to say to everybody, we're all right so far. This is a very scary situation. Everyone is just sitting here to wait and see what happens. 6.8, they tell me, is a bad one. And I'll tell you, the guy from San Francisco was nodding his head. Oh, yeah. And right now, there definitely cannot be a game at this moment. There is no power here at all. People are just glued to their seats, not knowing where to go, because 50,000 people are not going to get out of this place all at once.
Well, that was, of course, during the 1989 World Series at Candlestick Park in San Francisco, and really one of the most memorable moments in World Series history, transcendent of the game itself. And that was actually introduced, as you heard, by Gary Cohen, who had completed his first year as a Mets radio broadcaster along with Bob Murphy. But my question to you, Gary, before I even say hello, is what were you doing in the studio?
Hi, Howie.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, Susan. You know, it was interesting when I was thinking about coming on with you guys today. That was the first thing that I thought of, because I will never forget that night. I was... they had asked me to do like a pre-game show and a post-game show for the World Series games that year. And as it turned out, I only did the first two games. So when we saw on television that the earthquake had knocked out power and the situation was going on there, we got right back on the air. And I don't know how we made contact with Susan in the press box there. I don't even know how you had a phone line that was working. Remember, this is pre-cell phone days.
Right. I'll tell you.
How did that happen?
I'll tell you that, because for some reason, two phone lines did not go out in the entire park. My phone line, back to WFAN, and a guy in Chicago, his name was Les Grobstein, who was sitting next to me, and he tells me that he still has marks from my fingernails in his arm from that. Two phones in the whole place. I don't know what they did. Somebody did something, you know, someone was watching over us, and my phone line did not go out. It was just me and the guy from Chicago, and we were the only ones that had phone lines. And so you heard me talking to people saying, tell everybody we're okay. Everybody from New York, except for the one beat writer who was in the football press box, a different press box. Everyone was there. We were all sitting together in the upper deck. And tell my wife I'm okay, tell everybody. But that's what happened. The phone did not go out. And I remembered, Gary, that you were there. And as Howie said, I don't remember why you were there, but I remember talking to you.
If I recall correctly, I believe that our intern that night was some kid named Ian Eagle.
Absolutely.
Wow. Absolutely.
Yep. 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 Yep.
Gary, let me ask you this, because I'm talking to you now just as another kid that grew up in Queens. And you probably imagined as a youngster the way I occasionally did. Wouldn't it be great to have a television or radio station that played nothing but sports, 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 24-7? And so when that actually came to fruition, you were still broadcasting in the minor leagues. You weren't actually in New York, I guess, for the beginning of it. But when you got to New York to join the Mets broadcast crew in 1989, what were your impressions kind of weighed and balanced against those abstract expectations or thoughts that you might have had all those years ago ruminating about the possibility?
Well, first of all, I remember as a kid, absorbing as much sports on the radio as I could, not just games, but, listening to Bill Mazur's show, listening to the show that Marv Albert did. I think it had a once-a-week show for a couple of years. Later on, listening to John Sterling's talk show. And because there was so little sports available on the radio, when those things were on, you paid, strict attention. Art Russ Jr. also. The idea of all sports radio, much like the idea of, ESPN, seemed outlandish back in those days in the 60s and the 70s. The fact that ESPN had launched and had had some degree of success certainly gave you the idea that it might be viable to have an all sports radio station. You had no idea until it actually happened. And, when WFAN first started, I was living up in Massachusetts back. I was doing the Pawtucket Red Sox at the time and living in Stoughton, Mass. And so the signal at 1050 occasionally would make its way up there, but it was kind of blocked in that direction. So it had to be on your car and it had to be at a certain hour when you could pick up the signal. And I would, tune in and listen as much as possible because, this was something new and something exciting and in my hometown. And so I get to hear bits and pieces, but, you guys can talk about this better than I can. The first year or so, there was no guarantee that this thing was going to last. There was a lot of money being thrown at it and, whether it was actually going to be viable was very much up in the air. And frankly, had it not been for the Mets and Don Imus, I'm not sure whether WFAN would have been viable to survive.
Yeah, that's such a good Agreed. Point. When they moved down the dial to 660, and Don Imus came with the station, so brought all his listeners, and that was the big thing. Yeah, how many announcers have come out of Pawtucket? I mean, it's just amazing. Every time everybody's, and now Andy Freeda, the Rays, and now Pawtucket has ceased to exist, which is too bad. But so many announcers.
Don Orsillo and Andy and Aaron Goldsmith and Seattle and Dave Jagler in Washington. The list goes on and on. But I was the first.
Now, what years were you there?
I was there 87 and 88, right before I came to the Mets.
87 and 88. I would love to ask you, when you came to New York, and obviously, you're going in with you're in the booth with a guy who's been there and is popular and as famous as anybody in the broadcast booth. Well, did you have how many nerves did you have when you came in at the beginning? What was that like? I know what you must have been feeling, because that's a big spot to come in.
Well, I got to do one game in 1988 filling in. Gary Thorne, who was Bob Murphy's partner before me, had started doing the New Jersey Devils that year as well. And quite surprisingly, the Devils, who had been awful up until that point, made the playoffs, which created some conflicts for Gary. And so they had several different announcers fill in for him, and I got to do one game in May of 88. And I have to tell you, I was so incredibly nervous that day, so petrified. I remember meeting Howie for the first time that day as well.
Well, that'll ruin things for you.
Was he nice to you? Was he at least nice to you?
He had no idea what to make of me. Let's just put it that way.
Well, when I you know what? I remember sitting with you in the dugout,
right?
The Mets dugout, hours before the game, and your knees were knocking. I mean, you could hear the clanging of bone on bone. I'm surprised if you have any cartilage in either knee.
I had no idea what I was doing, no idea what to do. And there was one point in the broadcast right before the game where Murph threw it to me to do the lineups, and I did the lineups, and then I had no idea what to do next.
Uh-oh.
And Murph saw that I was stuck, that I was frozen, and he reached out his hand and patted my hand with his and just took it from there, and really it just calmed my nerves, and the rest of it was you know, somewhat doable. And then that winter I got the job, and it also helped that Murph and I in spring of 1989, which was my first year as a Mets full-time announcer, we did 23 spring training games that year, because remember, that was the last spring before Mike and the Mad Dog happened. So for weekday afternoon programming, a Mets exhibition game was much better than in the minds of the programming folks than anything else they could put on the air. So they filled every conceivable space with Mets exhibition games. And that was the last year that happened, because Mike and the Mad Dog took off after that, which...
We're having a little phone problem, apparently.
Gary, stand still. We're losing you here. You're breaking up.
How about this? Is this
okay,
better?
That's better. That's better. Yeah. Don't move.
That's good. He's standing on his head with his left leg extended out.
You know, this is radio in 2020. It's really of a piece with everything else that's going on.
Right. You can't move. Wherever you find a good spot, do not move an inch. Where are you anyway? Are you here?
I'm in my house, yes,
okay,
in Connecticut.
So you're in Connecticut. Okay. What was it for you to move to television? What was the big difference that you had to find, and did you do it really easily?
Well, I had to dress better, I had to talk less, and I had to play well with others. I mean, those are really the three things, right? Because you know, we dress casually on radio because we can. We pretty much do our own broadcast, although I have to tell you, my last 2 years doing radio, when Howie and I got to work together full-time, were probably the most delightful 2 years I've had in my career, just because, you know, we were two people with similar backgrounds and similar brains, and it was just such an incredible rush to work with Howie for those 2 years. So, you know, but you kind of do your own show on radio in a way that you don't on television. So there's that. But the biggest thing is that, you know, I am still a radio guy doing TV 15 years later. You know, everything that goes through my brain is what I would say if I were on the radio, and I have to filter 90% of that out and figure out which 10% to go with. And that's still a task to this day.
But, you know, Gary, it's interesting you say that, and I don't think I've ever discussed this with you. This is just my own impression, and maybe you completely disagree with it. But I think that we are the last generation, and the youngest branch of that generation, I would say, would be Kenny Albert, Ian Eagle, Bob Papa, that group at the youngest age range. I would all put them in the category of kids who came up as broadcasters endeavoring to do radio, learn how to broadcast a game on radio, and then eventually a transition and make the adjustment to television and the commensurate changes that you need to make. But I think if you took a young broadcaster today, his sensibilities are strictly television, and if you had to put him on radio to do games, I think it'd be harder for him or her than it was for us. Do you agree with that?
I think that's true to a large extent, Howie. I think there are a lot of kids who come up looking to do television, but I'm very fortunate that I get to talk to a lot of young broadcasters who are aspiring to do radio, whether it's guys who are working currently in the minor leagues or college kids or even high school kids in some cases, who are looking to improve their skills on radio. So I think don't think it's as dire as the way you just presented it. I think it's largely true because so many kids coming up today really have no attachment to sports on radio and are much more comfortable with the idea of sports on TV. But I think there's still a niche there of young people who are aspiring to do great radio play-by-play, and that's encouraging to me.
You know what, Gary, to just go on that for a little bit, I think that a lot of people, and there are young people that maybe because of their fathers or mothers or grandparents or whatever, to me, baseball has always been a radio sport because you can picture in your mind a lot more beautifully than what is actually going on sometimes. And I think that in radio, when you create the picture and people's imaginations can help you see it and create baseball, I still think it's a radio sport. And I think as you know, we've met young people who still have that sensibility that they just want to create a story out there. And that's what baseball is to me. It's like a long soap opera. It takes a long time from, if we have a real season, from the end of March to October. So it's like the quintessential soap opera story. It just keeps going, but you have to build it and build it, ending in October. And I think radio does that with a beautiful, beautiful finesse.
I think that's true. And I think also, Susan, it gives an opportunity for broadcasters to establish their personalities because baseball is a great companion for people. And, you know, you can have a little bit of this on television, but radio just lends itself to having a friendly voice that you can listen to either with your ears pricked up or in the background. And a good announcer on radio is able to, you know, create that rocking chair effect where a listener sits back and relaxes and listens to a story and then leans forward when the pitch is thrown, hoping or thinking that there might be action, and then leans back again and gets ready for the next pitch. And there's a certain hypnotic effect to it when it's done right, I think draws people in. And, you know, there are so many great practitioners of that art. I think that, you know, we're very fortunate to be among that group that's been able to create that kind of relationship with the listeners. It's kind of a special thing.
Well, Gary, I got to tell you, and I know I've said this to your face, and I don't mean to say this in a patronizing way or just in a gratuitous fashion, but as great as those 2 years were that we worked together, for me, the end result was that I felt like I got something of a diploma because, you know, you took me to school. I mean, I learned from watching you broadcast a game on radio, the intensity with which you had to focus on every detail. And so the play doesn't necessarily end with a runner reaching base or even a runner scoring. It's all of the ancillary things that go along with that, whether it's the crowd, whether it's reaction in the dugout, things like that. And so along those lines, last question I've got for you before we have to let you go. Can you recall the most focused that you have ever had to be in making a specific call that in retrospect you say, boy, I'm glad I nailed it because God forbid I would have blown it. You know what I mean? A significant moment where you had to just capture every specific instance.
Well, that's a rough one, but you know, I'd go back to the Andy Chavez catch. That was, you know, something completely unforeseen. It was obviously in a big moment in a tie game in a game seven. And, you know, just not just calling the play and finishing the play and, you know, in terms of the getting the double play but also putting it in perspective in the moment, which I think is sometimes the hardest thing to do in play-by-play because you want to capture every nuance of what happens, but you also want to make sure that the listener understands the import of it. And I think that was a circumstance where, you know, it was important to do that in the moment and do it quickly before, you know, you had to go to break. So, yeah, I think that being in the minor leagues and working solo really gave me a chance to, you know, to learn that kind of stuff, the nuts and bolts of it, and the observation turned into words that I don't think you can get from any other experience. And I tried to translate that when I got to the big leagues and doing radio for 17 years. And I miss that sometimes, Howie. I really do.
I hear you. I hear you. But no one does that better, my friend. And I hope I get to see you pretty soon from a socially acceptable distance, you know?
Yeah, I'll wave to you with my mask to your mask.
Exactly.
It's going to be weird, but I hope we get to do it. And it's coming down the pike. It looks like, you know, we're going to stagger our way there, but hopefully we'll have a season.
Now, what did I read? That you're going to be by yourself in a booth, and Keith and...
Well, we're going to, because there's no visiting TV broadcast, we're going to use the visitor's TV booth, which is next to ours at Citi Field, and I'll sit with the stat guy in one booth, and Keith and Ron will sit in the other booth. That way we'll be able to spread out. We're going to get one of those traffic mirrors and put it up in front of us so we can actually see each other.
That's a good idea.
The game is going on. But Susan, everything is going to be different. Are you guys traveling? I know Howie has been on.
Traveling? The only place I will travel is to Citi Field. Any place I can go in my car.
So neither one, because they gave radio the option of traveling, but neither one of you were planning to do that.
No. Well, I know that the guys in California are like, any place you can drive like a commute, the radio guys, and supposedly if John and I want to go to Citi Field, they'll have a couple of booths for us. I don't know that that's going to happen, but and I know that the guys in California are planning to travel to L.A., you know, the Angel guys, they'll go to Dodger Stadium, they'll go to San Diego, and they'll go to, obviously their own, but travel, no. If you're going to, you're going to get in your car and drive by yourself to Baltimore, then what do you do?
Yeah, we're doing all the games from our booth at Citi Field, home and road, and that, you know, I've never recreated a game off a television feed. I've been doing this for a long, long time, but that's something I've never done before, and it's going to be a challenge for all of us,
but it's
not going to look or sound the same, but at least it'll be baseball on the radio and baseball on the TV, which I guess is the best anybody could hope for.
You bet. Gary, thanks. Stay safe. Best at home, and we'll see you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Bye, Gary.
You got it. So that is Gary Cohen, my partner for a couple of years on Mets radio broadcasts. Gary really redefined how to broadcast baseball on the radio between 1989 and 2005 inclusive. And when we get back, we will chat with a very much central figure in the early days of WFAN. We did a manager show prior to every Mets game, and I will hang my hat on the statement that it was the best manager show that's ever been done on radio because he allowed it to be. Davey Johnson joins us when we get back right after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.